Chapter 8. Would you buy a man for nothing? He intended to pay the very same price for Sir George Gorgon too, but there was no need to tell the baronet so. Only of this the reader must be made aware. While Mr. Crampton was conducting this intrigue, which was to bring a new recruit to the ministerial ranks, his mighty spirit condescended to ponder upon subjects of infinitely less importance, and to arrange plans for the welfare of his nephew, and the young woman to whom he had made a present of his heart. These young persons, as we said before, had arranged to live in Mr. Perkins' own house in Bedford Row. It was of a peculiar construction, and might more properly be called a house and a half. For a snug little tenement of four chambers protruded from the back of the house into the garden. These rooms communicated with the drawing rooms occupied by Mr. Scully, and Perkins, who acted as his friend and secretary, used frequently to sit in the one nearest the member's study, in order that he might be close at hand, to confer with that great man. The rooms had a private entrance too, were newly decorated, and in them the young couple proposed to live, the kitchen and garrets being theirs likewise. What more could they need? We are obliged to be particular in describing these apartments, for extraordinary events occurred there. To say the truth, until the present period Mr. Crampton had taken no great interest in his nephew's marriage, or, indeed, in the young man himself. The old gentleman was of a saturnine turn, and inclined to undervalue the qualities of Mr. Perkins, which were idleness, simplicity, enthusiasm, and easy good nature. Such fellows never do anything in the world, he would say, and for such he had accordingly the most profound contempt. But when, after John Perkins' repeated entreaties, he had been induced to make the acquaintance of Miss Gorgon, he became instantly charmed with her, and warmly espoused her cause against her overbearing relations. At his suggestion she wrote back, to decline Sir George Gorgon's peremptory invitation, and hinted at the same time, that as he had attained an age, and a position which enabled her to be the mistress of her own actions. To this letter there came an answer from Lady Gorgon which we shall not copy, but which simply stated that Miss Lucy Gorgon's conduct was unchristian, ungrateful, unladylike, and immodest, that the Gorgon family disowned her for the future, and left her at liberty, to form whatever base connections she pleased. A pretty world this, said Mr. Crampton, in a great rage, when the letter was shown to him. His same fellow, Scully, dissuades my nephew from taking a place, because Scully wants it for himself. This prude of a Lady Gorgon cries out shame, and disowns an innocent amiable girl. She a heartless jilt herself once, and a heartless flirt now. The Pharisees, and to call mine a base family too. Now, Lady Gorgon did not in the least know Mr. Crampton's connection with Mr. Perkins, or she would have been much more guarded in her language. But whether she knew it or not, the old gentleman felt a huge indignation, and determined to have his revenge. That's right, Uncle. Shall I call Gorgon out? Said the impetuous young Perkins, who was all for blood. John, you are a fool, said his uncle. Who shall have a better revenge? You shall be married from Sir George Gorgon's house, and you shall see Mr. William Pitt Scully sold for nothing. This to the veteran diplomatist seemed to be the highest triumph which man could possibly enjoy. It was very soon to take place. And, as has been the case ever since the world began, woman, lovely woman was to be the cause of Scully's fall. The tender scene at Lord Mantrap's was followed by many others equally sentimental. Sir George Gorgon called upon his colleague the very next day, and brought with him a card from Lady Gorgon inviting Mr. Scully to dinner. The attorney eagerly accepted the invitation, was received in Baker Street by the whole amiable family with much respectful cordiality, and was pressed to repeat his visits as country neighbors should. More than once did he call, and somehow always at the hour, when Sir George was away at his club, or riding in the park, or elsewhere engaged. Sir George Gorgon was very old, very feeble, very much shattered in constitution. Lady Gorgon used to impart her fears to Mr. Scully every time he called there, and the sympathizing attorney used to console her as best he might. Sir George's country agent neglected the property his lady consulted Mr. Scully concerning it. He knew to a fraction how large her jointure was, how she was to have Gorgon Castle for her life, and how, in the event of the young baronet's death, he too, was a sickly poor boy, the chief part of the estates, bought by her money, would be at her absolute disposal. What a pity these odious politics prevent me from having you for our agent, would Lady Gorgon say, and indeed Scully thought it was a pity too. Ambitious Scully! What wild notions filled his brain! He used to take leave of Lady Gorgon and ruminate upon these things. And when he was gone, Sir George and her ladyship used to laugh. If we can but commit him, if we can but make him vote for Pincher, said the general, my peerage is secure. Hawksby and Crampton as good as told me so. The point had been urged upon Mr. Scully repeatedly and adroitly. Is not Pincher a more experienced man than Macabaw? Would Sir George say to his guest over their wine? Scully allowed it. And you vote for him on personal grounds, and say so in the House? Scully wished he could, how he wished he could. Every time the general coughed, Scully saw his friend's desperate situation more and more, and thought how pleasant it would be to be lord of Gorgon Castle. Knowing my property, cried Sir George, as you do, and with your talents and integrity, what a comfort it would be, could I leave you as guardian to my boy. But these cursed politics prevent it, my dear fellow. Why will you be a radical? And Scully cursed politics too. And the low-bred rogue, added Sir George, when William Pitt Scully left the house. He will do everything but promise. My dear general, said Lady Gorgon, sidling up to him, and patting him on his old yellow cheek. Why, dear Georgie, tell me one thing, are you jealous? Jealous, my dear. And jealous of that fellow Saw. Well then, give me leave, and you shall have the promise tomorrow. Asterisk, 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 tomorrow arrived. It was a remarkably fine day, and in the forenoon Mr. Perkins gave his accustomed knock at Scully's study, which was only separated from his own sitting room by a double door. John had wisely followed his uncle's advice, and was on the best terms with the honorable member. Here are a few sentences, said he, which I think may suit your purpose. Great public services, undeniable merit, years of integrity, cause of reform, and Macabaw forever. He put down the paper. It was, in fact, a speech in favor of Mr. Macabaw. Hush, said Scully, rather surlily, for he was thinking how disagreeable it was to support Macabaw, and besides, there were clerks in the room, whom the thoughtless Perkins had not at first perceived. As soon as that gentleman saw them, you are busy, I see, continued he in a lower tone. Came to say that I must be off duty today, for I am engaged to take a walk with some ladies of my acquaintance. So saying, the light-hearted young man placed his hat unceremoniously on his head, and went off through his own door, humming a song. He was in such high spirits that he did not even think of closing the doors of communication, and Scully looked after him with a sneer. Ladies, forsooth, thought he, I know who they are. This precious girl that he is fooling with, for one, I suppose. He was right. Perkins was off on the wings of love to see Miss Lucy, and she and Aunt Bix and Uncle Crampton had promised this very day to come and look at the apartments which Mrs. John Perkins was to occupy with her happy husband. Poor devil, so continued Mr. Scully's meditations, it is almost too bad to do him out of his place, but my Bob wants it, and John's girl has, I hear, £7,000. His uncle will get him another place before all that money is spent. And herewith Mr. Scully began conning the speech which Perkins had made for him. He had not read it more than 6 times, in truth, he was getting it by heart, when his head clerk came to him from the front room, bearing a card. A footman had brought it, who said his lady was waiting below. Lady Gorgon's name was on the card. to seize his hat and rush downstairs was, with Mr. Scully, the work of an infinitesimal portion of time. It was indeed Lady Gorgon in her Gorgonian chariot. "Mr. Scully," said she, popping her head out of window and smiling in a most engaging way, "I want to speak to you on something very particular indeed," and she held him out her hand. Scully pressed it most tenderly. He hoped all heads in Bedford Row were at the windows to see him. "Can't ask you into the carriage, for you see the governess is with me, and I want to talk secrets to you. Shall I go and make a little promenade?" said Mademoiselle, innocently. And her mistress hated her for that speech. "No, Mr. Scully, I am sure, will let me come in for 5 minutes." Mr. Scully was only too happy. My lady descended and walked upstairs, leaning on the happy solicitor's arm. But how should he manage? The front room was consecrated to clerks. There were clerks too, as ill luck would have it, in his private room. "Erkins is out for the day," thought Scully. "I will take her into his room." And into Perkins' room he took her, and he shut the double doors after him too, and trembled as he thought of his own happiness. "What a charming little study," said Lady Gorgon, seating herself. And indeed it was very pretty. For Perkins had furnished it beautifully, and laid out a neat tray with cakes, a cold fowl, and sherry, to entertain his party withal. "Indeed, do you bachelors always live so well?" continued she, pointing to the little cold collation. Mr. Scully looked rather blank when he saw it, and a dreadful suspicion crossed his soul, but there was no need to trouble Lady Gorgon with explanations. Therefore, at once, and with much presence of mind, he asked her to partake of his bachelor's fare. She would refuse Mr. Scully nothing that day. A pretty sight would it have been for young Perkins to see strangers so unceremoniously devouring his feast. She drank, Mr. Scully drank, and so emboldened was he by the draught, that he actually seated himself by the side of Lady Gorgon, on John Perkins' new sofa. Her ladyship had of course something to say to him. She was a pious woman, and had suddenly conceived a violent wish for building a chapel of ease at Oldborough, to which she entreated him to subscribe. She enlarged upon the benefits that the town would derive from it, spoke of Sunday schools, sweet spiritual instruction, and the duty of all well-minded persons to give aid to the scheme. "I will subscribe £100, said Scully, at the end of her ladyship's harangue. "Old I not do anything for you?"
Thank you, dear Mr. Scully," said the enthusiastic woman. How the ear went burning through his soul. "H," added she, "if you would, but do anything for me if you, who are so eminently, so truly distinguished, in a religious point of view, would but see the truth in politics too, and if I could see your name among those of the true patriot party in this empire, how blessed, oh, how blessed should I be. Poor Sir George often says he should go to his grave happy, could he but see you the guardian of his boy. And I, your old friend, for we were friends, William, how have I wept to think of you as one of those who are bringing our monarchy to ruin. Do promise me this too." And she took his hand, and pressed it between hers. The heart of William Pitt Scully, during this speech, was thumping up and down with a frightful velocity and strength. His old love, the agency of the Gorgon property, the dear widow, 5,000 a year clear, 1,000 delicious hopes rushed madly through his brain, and almost took away his reason. And there she sat, she, the loved one, pressing his hand and looking softly into his eyes. Down, down he plumped on his knees. "Juliana," shrieked he, "don't take away your hand. My love, my only love. Speak but those blessed words again. Call me William once more, and do with me what you will." Juliana cast down her eyes and said, in the very smallest type, "William." Asterisk, 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 when the door opened, and in walked Mr. Crampton, leading Mrs. Biggs, who could hardly contain herself for laughing, and Mr. John Perkins, who was squeezing the arm of Miss Lucy. They had heard every word of the two last speeches.
For at the very moment when Lady Gorgon had stopped at Mr. Scully's door, the four above named individuals had issued from Great James Street into Bedford Row. Lucy cried out that it was her aunt's carriage, and they all saw Mr. Scully come out, bareheaded, in the sunshine, and my lady descend, and the pair go into the house. They meanwhile entered by Mr. Perkins' own private door, and had been occupied in examining the delightful rooms on the ground floor, which were to be his dining room and library, from which they ascended a stair, to visit the other two rooms, which were to form Mrs. John Perkins' drawing room and bedroom. Now whether it was that they trod softly, or that the stairs were covered with a grand new carpet and drugget, as was the case, or that the party within were too much occupied in themselves to heed any outward disturbances, I know not. But Lucy, who was advancing with John, he was saying something about one of the apartments, the rogue. Lucy started and whispered, "There is somebody in the rooms." And at that instant began the speech already reported, thank you, dear Mr. Scully, etc., etc., which was delivered by Lady Gorgon in a full clear voice. For, to do her ladyship justice, she had not one single grain of love for Mr. Scully, and during the delivery of her little oration, was as cool as the coolest cucumber. Then began the impassioned rejoinder, to which the four listened on the landing place, and then the little ilium, as narrated above, at which juncture Mr. Crampton thought proper to rattle at the door, and, after a brief pause, to enter with his party. William had had time to bounce off his knees, and was on a chair at the other end of the room. "What, Lady Gorgon?" said Mr. Crampton, with excellent surprise, "how delighted I am to see you. Always, I see employed in works of charity." The chapel of ease paper was on her knees, and on such an occasion too, it is really the most wonderful coincidence. "My dear madam, here is a silly fellow, a nephew of mine, who is going to marry a silly girl, a niece of your own." "Sir," I began Lady Gorgon, rising. "They heard every word," whispered Mr. Crampton eagerly. "Come forward, Mr. Perkins, and show yourself." Mr. Perkins made a genteel bow. "Is Lucy, pleased to shake hands with your aunt, and this, my dear madam, is Mrs. Biggs, of Mecklenburg Square, who, if she were not too old, might marry a gentleman in the treasury, who..." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.